Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump is accusing former President Barack Obama of wiretapping his offices at Trump Tower in New York before November's presidential election. However, in a series of tweets Saturday, Mr. Trump did not provide proof to support his accusations against Mr. Obama. The former president's office has not responded to the accusations, but former top advisor for the president posted on Twitter that ordering a wiretap is beyond the powers of the presidency. Mr. Trump's wiretapping claims come as his administration faces mounting pressure from multiple FBI congressional investigations into contacts between members of his cabinet, or campaign rather, and Russian officials. The United Nations humanitarian coordinator in Iraq has issued a warning about the possible use of chemical weapons in Mosul in recent days, where Islamic State militants are battling U.S.-backed Iraqi forces. The International Committee of the Red Cross says seven people have been admitted to a hospital near Mosul and are being treated for suspected exposure to chemical agents. In Libya, the fighting is continuing Saturday for control of the country's oil facilities around the city of Benghazi. The eastern-based Libyan National Army had given up control Friday of at least one major oil port it captured last year. The withdrawal followed an offensive by a faction known as the Benghazi Defense Brigades. Efforts to take over Libya's oil ports raised the prospect of increased violence in the region. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Somali government officials say more than 110 people, mainly women and children, died from waterborne diseases in 48 hours as a result of the enduring drought in the country. Speaking Saturday in Mogadishu, Somalia's new Prime Minister, Hassan Ali Kahir, announced the deaths, providing the first official figure about months of severe drought. He's calling on Somalis and the international community to put together a life-saving emergency response. UN aid agencies recently warned there is only a two-month window to avert a drought catastrophe in Somalia. A UN mediator says Syria's warring parties are going home with a clear agenda for future negotiations. UN Special Envoy for Syria, Stephane de Mistura, said he anticipated there would be a lot of posturing and negative rhetoric from the opposing sides about the state of the negotiations now that the latest round has ended.
At the beginning of this period of round of talks, we said that we were not going to expect, and we should not expect, a breakthrough. This is a war of 6 years where people were not even looking at each other, they were just fighting at each other.
De Mistura hopes to resume the next round of Syrian talks later this month. The families of those on board missing Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 have launched efforts to raise at least $50 million to fund a private search as they mark the third anniversary of the plane's disappearance. Hear now from the widow of a MH370 passenger.
The search should go on. The reason for the suspension is that they say there's no more credible evidence that have come in order for them to continue the search. So I guess they should get in more experts then to sit down and reevaluate what they have and go through everything again and to see what went wrong.
MH370 disappeared on March 8, 2014, while flying from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing with 239 people on board. A final report on the plane's disappearance will be released this year. Jordan has hanged 15 convicts. The official Petra News Service said those executed included terrorists and criminals convicted of heinous crimes, including rape. Jordan had a moratorium on hanging from 2006 to 2014, but restored the hanging death sentence after public opinion blamed a hike in crime on the policy. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We've been praying for him as our president, and when we heard that he's sick, so we said we need to pray more because that's our president. We need to pray that God will heal him and let him come back and continue to lead us.
The Christian Association of Nigeria calls for prayers for President Muhammadu Buhari's recovery.
It's rather unfortunate, but as lawyers, you know, we respect citizens' rights to express themselves and to associate freely.
Zambian ruling party supporters accuse the leader of the Law Association of supporting the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, against the government.
We don't want to go by that official proclamation. We trade union leaders will always want to insistently ask and appeal that we should readjust that time schedule.
And the Cameroonian government announces that examination for the General Certificate of Education will proceed as originally scheduled. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The Christian Association of Nigeria is calling on all Christians to pray for President Muhammadu Buhari's recovery. The president is currently in London, where he is receiving medical treatment for yet-to-be-publicly-disclosed ailment. But while Vice President Yemi Osinbajo is acting as president, a section of opposition supporters have called on Buhari to step down. To learn more about the call on Christians to pray for the president, I reach Reverend Musa Asake, General Secretary of the Christian Association of Nigeria.
Well, we've been praying for him as our president, and when we heard that he's sick, so we said we need to pray more because that's our president. We need to pray that God will heal him and let him come back and continue to lead us.
Is this an agenda for all churches in Nigeria or other religious bodies as well?
Well, I don't know of other religious body, but for us Christians, that's on agenda. We call for that prayer.
Is this call a specific call that will be adhered to all Christians in Nigeria, specifically on their agendas in their prayer, or just for all Christians to pray in their own time?
Yeah, we do not declare a particular day for that. We ask that Christians pray in their various churches, their various homes, but let's just remember our president in prayer.
Are there plans, if I may ask you, that the Christian Association of Nigeria will declare some prayer and fasting for the president, because as the press release says, it is a call by God for Christians to pray for their leaders?
Because of that, we have been praying. Even when the issue of being sick has not arisen, we pray for him as our leader, because the Bible commands us to pray for our leaders, and we have been doing that. Now, this step of time is the fact that we heard he is sick. So we are saying all Christians should embark and pray that God will heal him.
There are some Nigerians, and you are a Nigerian as well, who are worried, and they have expressed concern that the presidency appeared not to tell Nigerians what the president is facing, so they would direct their prayers to what ails the president for God's divine intervention in that. What are your views about that?
Well, we are told the president went on vacation, and he will go through medical checkup. Then we were told, as a result of the medical checkup, he underwent some various tests that he extended his return. Now, the fact that we know he is sick, we said, let us pray, whatever it is, for God's intervention, because our God is the greatest physician that we have. So that's why we are committing him to God in prayer, that God will intervene.
I remember some years back, Christian Association of Nigeria asked for prayers, and they prayed for the former president, who eventually God called him home. And some people are saying that at least as Nigerians, they expect some form of transparency, so they know that their prayers are not necessarily in vain. Do you share that sentiment?
You see, you have to draw a line between the political body and the religious body. We are Christians, a religious body. Ours is to pray. But that analysis is a political analysis, which is we are not part of it. You pray to God. You don't give God a timeline. That's why you pray to God. God knows exactly what to do. You ask God to please heal the person. No timeline. God knows everything. Ours is to pray. We are commanded in the Bible to pray for our leaders, and that's what we are doing.
What would be the Christian Association's message to Nigerians, both home and abroad, about this call for prayer on behalf of the president for healing?
Well, you see, we as Christians, we have asked Christians pray for our leader. Again, I'll repeat, we have been praying for our leaders. This one happens to be very specific because of what is happening right now. We don't go public in the prayers. We went public at this time because we were publicly told that this is what is happening with the president, so he will not be able to come back. He's waiting for results of certain tests. Now, we don't analyze or we don't give a timeline. That's why the president of the Christian Association of Nigeria called on all Christians to embark on prayers for the president, that whatever is going on, that the Lord will intervene so he can come back home soon.
Reverend Musa Asake is the General Secretary of the Christian Association of Nigeria. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. Supporters from the Zambian ruling Patriotic Front Party, or PF, are demanding the president of the Law Association of Zambia to step down. The supporters accuse Ms. Linda Kasonde of bias. They say she appears to support the main opposition United Party for National Development, or UPND, and its leader Hakainde Hichilema. Pleas were called to maintain law and order at the offices of the Law Association after PF supporters' behavior almost turned violent. For reaction over the accusations, I reached Law Association President Linda Kasonde in the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
It's rather unfortunate, but as lawyers, you know, we respect citizens' rights to express themselves and to associate freely. However, our position is that that shouldn't infringe upon our right as an association to exercise our statutory mandate freely. So we hope that, you know, such protests should take place legally and they shouldn't threaten the safety of other people. But we're very happy that no one was injured and no property was damaged. And we're very grateful to the police for having intervened very quickly as well.
Is your security at the moment threatened following this incident that happened? And have you notified the police about it? Because I understand some of the cadres were armed, although not sophisticated weapons, but they were armed all the same.
Well, I'm a citizen of this country, and in my role as president of the association, I'm here to serve the people of Zambia. So I believe that the majority of citizens of our nation are in support of our work. As we, you know, our aim is merely to promote the rule of law, good governance, social justice and constitutionalism in the country. And I believe that all well-meaning Zambians are in support of that.
The protesters want you to come out and admit that you are either a sympathizer of the UPND opposition party and perhaps by extension supporter of Hakainde Hichilema, the defeated presidential candidate of the UPND, and that you seem to side all the time with the UPND or opposition groups against the government. So they want you to come out and say it. What do you make of their criticism?
Well, I think it's slightly unfair, especially given the fact that the association works through a council of 16 members. And our decisions are made as a collective. I don't make them in my personal capacity. We're acting on behalf of the association in accordance with our mandate. So I don't think that those allegations are founded.
Do you think their criticisms are justified? Because they keep on saying that time and time again, pronouncement from the Law Association of Zambia appear to support the opposition, and that you have made the association, which is supposed to be apolitical or non-political for that matter, to be partisan.
I don't think that the allegations are founded. Our organization is non-partisan. It just so happens that there's only one party in government, and our role is to ensure that the law is followed by those who govern the people in the country. So sometimes it happens that we have an opinion that differs from that of the government. But that's to be expected because, you know, if we're to perform our role properly, you know, we have to ensure that the rule of law is observed.
Some of the protesters have gone a little bit further to say that perhaps you should resign from your post for another person who is non-partisan and who could be possibly a sympathizer of the party to take the helm of affairs of the Law Association of Zambia. Your take?
Well, probably those people feel injured by the positions taken by the association, but, you know, so far... I haven't heard. Well, you know, these calls are coming from outside of the association. So, you know, of course, everybody's entitled to their own opinion.
Linda Kasonde is the president for the Law Association of Zambia. She spoke with me from Lusaka. The Cameroonian government has announced that the General Certificate of Education, or GCE, examination will proceed as originally scheduled. The student will take the practical examination on May 15 and the written exams will be held on June 1st. This despite ongoing teacher strike in the English-speaking parts of the country. For more on how the announced examination date will impact students in the English-speaking areas, I reached Valentin Tami, the president of the Teachers Association of Cameroon.
You're very timid. You're very, very timid. But we don't want to go by that official proclamation. We trade union leaders will always want to insistently ask and appeal very, very insistently that they should readjust that timetable. We have made some appeals and we are waiting to hear what the minister will say. He might have said what he said in order to impress on Cameroonians the fact that these exams were going to be organized, whether they liked it or not. But we are on the table and we are negotiating. And we are saying that those deadlines are not practicable.
Students and some teachers in other parts of Cameroon say that this will not be fair to them if the government or the minister decides to consider your suggestion to change the timetable, because the entire country is aware that during this time, GCE exams are usually administered across Cameroon. What is your take on that?
Yes, I'll begin with a kind of proverb. When the illness is very, very grievous, the remedy has to be very, very strong. And we are here talking about problems that Cameroonians of Anglophone extraction have raised. And we are saying that these Anglophone Cameroonians who are into the union called Republic of Cameroon feel that for over 50 years they have been marginalized and they are complaining that government should listen to those grievances which to them are legitimate. And we think that for there to be healing, children who have been studying can afford to understand that we need to take a solution like that to solve the problem from a national perspective so that the GCE board does not organize two exams. We know why there is always a hurry to get exams organized and published by July, because children who come from well-to-do homes want to get registered in the July session in Western universities. But there's the July session and the January session. And we are making a clarion appeal from our aggrieved heart that if we want to have true national healing, some people too will learn to sacrifice. And the Northwest and the Southwest have usually been first in both Anglophone and Francophone exams in Cameroon. And if we give them the opportunity to revise and revise and revise so that they can beat us to that first position, and they beat us to that first position, I think that it will be good that they too have made progress.
What happens if the government maintains its stance to stick to the original timetable scheduled for the examinations? Wouldn't this be a detriment to the students because of what the critics of yours have said has been an intransigence on the part of teachers who have refused to teach yet drew on, you know, public purse by receiving payment despite being on strike, as against those in private schools and church-administered schools who might not necessarily get paid?
Yes, I think talking about the issue of intransigence, we are praying and hoping that government does not get intransigent on this, because it is in government's interest, like it is in our own interest, to get this problem resolved in a way that, you know, people will feel that something has been done. That's the first thing. Talking about teachers who have refused to teach but who continue earning their salaries, we have made a reference to that issue, talking about social injustice. We know teachers who since December have not had a salary. And we are talking about solidarity, the solidarity that governs trade unionism. And what we are saying is, while we are thinking that trade union leaders must always move forward together, if we started a strike, six of us, we must suspend it, six of us. And that's why when four were forced by circumstances to suspend, they have kept on appealing for clemency and amnesty to be granted to them. We are seeing solidarity in the light of everybody moving together holistically so that those of private sector should not complain. They have started complaining because they don't have a salary. And we are telling the teachers in the public sector that it is unjust that they are earning a salary for no work done, while those in the private sector, some of them have not had a salary for 3 months.
What is the suggestion that the teachers are making in terms of the registration, which has been closed for some time now ahead of the examination, which is set for May 15 for the practicals, and the main exams or the theory part, which is set for June 1st?
We suggested a three-week extension of registration. Was suggested a 2 months, 1.5 to 2 months extension as far as teaching is concerned. And we have also made suggestions as far as the end of year for non-examination classes is concerned, and end of year for examination classes. We have made those proposals, but there to be a way ahead. Otherwise, it might not be easy to really catch up.
Valentin Tame is the president of the Teachers Association of Cameroon. He spoke with me from Buea, the capital of the Cameroonian Southwest region. A storm is raging over the payment of $1.7 million in bonuses to 42 government officials who helped Uganda win dispute with oil companies over capital gains taxes on the resale of oil blocks. The payment, known as a presidential handshake, are a subject of a parliamentary committee. Charles Mwangui Mpaji is the Kampala bureau chief for the East African newspaper. He's also one of two journalists who, some years ago, sued the Ugandan government to make public the oil-sharing agreement. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in the capital, Kampala, and asked him what he made of the controversy.
The biggest guess is to what end the committee's investigation will be. Yes, at least we saw that for today, some of the government officials, the Minister for Finance and the Secretary to the Treasury, came out and apologized and said they mishandled the whole handshake thing. But the bigger question is it completely strange? Was there a solicitation? Will any money be paid back? Those are big questions that are still hanging and haven't. I don't know how they'll be answered.
And according to the committee proceedings, is it clear from what you hear whether the president had the authority to dish out government funds?
Some people have said that the president can't do anything as the fountain of honor, but public officials doing their public job to be given what they wrote in their letters, a presidential handshake, is completely odd. People have gone to the public service rules of procedure. It indicates among appreciation that a financial reward can be given. The question is, for this particular handshake, there are more questions than answers. On one, did you get all the money that you said you're going to get? Number two, what exactly did you do or did those beneficiaries do to deserve that handshake? Were they the only ones who deserved a handshake? So there are many questions that are emerging out of this investigation.
And then what's emanating from this inquiry is that the fate of the total money, the nearly $400 million in capital gains tax, do we know where that money is?
That's a very interesting development that has emerged. We've been asking these questions, but they have been a bit muted. When the governor of the central bank, Emmanuel Tumusiime Mutebile, came to the committee, initially he said he had only a portion of that money, about $769 million, without the balance, and then later saying he doesn't know where the money is. That is rather curious. Another curious development is on court, the Tax Appeals Tribunal ruled in favor of the Uganda Revenue Authority to collect $407 million in the farm down of Talo to Total and Sinok, the Chinese national offshore oil company. Then, when Talo appealed to the International Tax Appeals Tribunal for arbitration, UAE agreed to settle out of court for a much lesser sum of $250 million. Now, the questions that are emerging are, did the Commissioner General of Uganda Revenue Authority, the Minister of Energy, have the power to grant a waiver, a tax waiver? Why did they grant a tax waiver, especially after winning at the Tax Appeals Tribunal? Because the next appeal would have been the High Court of Uganda, which in tax matters is the final appellate court. So those are details that I imagine that bring very new questions about this question of how we have handled the little money that's come out of oil so far since its discovery. And Douglas, you and your listeners might be interested to know that as early as 2007, I and my colleague Angelo Izama took government to court to give us the production sharing agreement for this oil. But it's been shrouded in a lot of mystery, a lot of secrecy, and I think it's a bit of that that's coming back to haunt whoever is involved as this parliamentary probe progresses.
Since this probe almost involves the who is who, the topmost officials in government, how do you see it concluding, or if it concludes, will it have any benefit?
The person who authorized the handshake is the President of Uganda. The person who's been at the center of all this oil, its discovery, the exploration program, now the progression towards production, is the President of the Republic of Uganda, President Yoweri Museveni. The final person that questions have to be asked of, where the money is, how much money actually has come in since we started the process, why did you authorize this handout, is going to end at the presidency. And the history of similar probes before, where people go to interview him and he ends up interviewing them or giving them a lecture, is for everyone to guess. So we are watching, we are waiting to see how it pans out. The concern of some people is, are we not throwing good money after bad money because the parliamentary committee is spending money on this?
Charles Manguia Mpaji is the Kampala bureau chief for the East African newspaper. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. A UN expert is calling for urgent action to curb attacks on people with albinism who are killed and maimed for their body parts. For VOA, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the independent expert on the enjoyment of human rights by persons with albinism has submitted a report on this harmful practice in African countries to the UN Human Rights Council.
More than 600 attacks and other violations against people with albinism have been reported in 27 countries over the last 6 years, with the most recent just a few days ago. UN expert Itponwosa Ero says it is believed that people with albinism can transmit magical powers. She says there is a high demand for their body parts for use in witchcraft rituals or traditional medicine. Because this odious practice operates in secret, she says many of these crimes go unreported. She says people pay a high price for albino body parts, believing they can bring wealth and good luck. This, she says, has led to a thriving clandestine market. Ero says she interviewed several perpetrators of attacks on albinos serving time in prison in Mozambique to learn why they had committed these crimes.
Several of these revealed to me that they were offered extremely high amounts of money in the hundreds of thousands of US dollar equivalents in exchange for body parts of persons with albinism. There was also accounts alleging the involvement of practitioners of traditional medicine and witch doctors, and I discussed with at least one practitioner of traditional medicine in custody. Although there was one reference to the involvement of a foreigner, all who were in prison I interviewed were all nationals of Mozambique.
She says this is contrary to the belief that these heinous crimes are being committed by foreigners. In her report to the UN Human Rights Council, Ero offers concrete recommendations for combating the killing, mutilating and trafficking in body parts of people with albinism. The action plan includes prevention, protection, and accountability measures, as well as steps to combat discrimination while exploring the root causes behind these crimes. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from collection of music from our continent. And it's time for music from our African collection.
Try to stand up and pick up your chest. somebody tell you, make you settle for less. Whenever you afraid, just so my head. Shop, shop, show, make we holler, let it go.
Oh, yeah, come, make we go. Make we go to all the best, so we talk, so we would like to go before. Make we go, make we see. But you learn a new for real, make we feel, make we check, and if not too hard, then they use you, we go low. But now after we go, we go low. Better on a truth, better on a light, then we glow. Where come, make we go, go, go. Where come, make we go. Where come, make we go. Make we go to all the best, so we talk, so we would like to go before. Make we go, make we see. But you learn a new for real, make we feel, make we check, and if not too hard, then they use you, we go low. How we learn something, we gon' know it's not true on our life, then we blow. Where you come, make we go, where you come, make we go.
A child is born into this world. She takes one step, a two step, and what next? A life to remember. Eti umekwama, no. Ni kama kusema kwamba ulivyo ungwa na Mola, yani ulivyo simama sana sana, uwezi kufanya.
If you don't try, you don't get. And if you don't go, then you never ever know, no. If you don't jump, you never fly. And if you don't fall, then you never feel the pain, girl. Time is a healer, pain is a teacher. Music is a stress reliever, be a believer.
Where you come, make we go. Let me go to all the places, so we talk, so we would like to go before. Make me go, make me see. But you know, let you for real, make me feel, make me check, I'm not too high, then we use, so we go low. But now after we go, we go. Better on a truth, better on a light, then we go. Where come, make we go, go, go. Where come, make we go. Where come, make we go. Where we go to all the best, so we talk, so we go like to go before. Make we go, make we see. But you know, let you for the air, make we feel, make we check, I'm not too high, then they use you, we go low.
That's how we learn something.
We don't know if not true on a life, then we go. Where come, make we go, go, go. Where come, make we go, go.
na kumendea mi pressure kizungu zungu.
Ya pongo yo wangu moyo wangu kitetea yara moyo kitete taratibu tazoya moyo wangu kitete mwenzenu moyo taratibu tazoya
tell your mama and your papa, tell your sister and your brother, baby girl, why you making me lose it? I don't wanna lose it, not ready for losing.
nimekuzoea. Nie, kinachoniuma ni mazoea. Nie, siwezi kuficha nimekuzoea. Dari yangu si shwari, muda wowote na danja. Fanya uche na daktari tena kibidi waganga. Mama tafuta hotari kutoka Mbinga na Tanga. Wale nguli machachali wapiga ndere kwa vanga.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, cross the river in a crowd and the crocodile won't eat you. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Just over 2 years ago, Russian opposition politician and former Deputy Prime Minister Boris Nemtsov was shot and killed as he walked across a bridge within sight of the Kremlin. A longtime advocate for democracy and transparency in government, Mr. Nemtsov had also been a vocal critic of Russian political and military interference in Ukraine. Although five people from Chechnya were arrested for his murder, some observers believe the government's investigation into the crime was flawed and that the person or persons who organized the assassination have not been identified or apprehended. On the eve of the second anniversary of his death, thousands of Russians took to the streets of Moscow and other cities, as they did last year, to pay tribute to Mr. Nemtsov. On February 27th, U.S. Ambassador to Russia John Teft visited the Bolshoi-Moskvoretsky Bridge, where Mr. Nemtsov was killed, and read a message there. I am here today with my deputy and my staff, along with my diplomatic colleagues representing the President and people of the United States, to honor the memory of Boris Nemtsov, a man whom we knew as a government official, a politician, and for many Americans, a friend, said Ambassador Teft. His family, loved ones, and his friends remain in our thoughts. We are here today to honor his memory, the values for which he stood, and to express our hope for the future. U.S. State Department Acting Spokesperson Mark Toner also issued a statement on the anniversary. Though Boris Nemtsov is gone, his spirit lives on in Russians young and old, who seek to build a more democratic and prosperous society, Mr. Toner wrote. We call once more on the Russian government to ensure that those responsible for Boris Nemtsov's killing are brought to justice.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.